Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cinehouse, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Tar, Dead for a Dollar, and Fall. As I said, you're on your own. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing just fine, Jill. How are you this week?
I'm dead for $10, actually.
Ah, okay. Well, yeah, that's right. You don't come cheap. Well, we'll get to that movie in a few moments, but let us begin with Tar, which is a movie which is getting all kinds of buzz and talk and whatnot nowadays. A lot of people feel that it is going to win extremely major Academy Awards, and we will see about that as time passes. But it's a very interesting movie, I have to say. It's interesting in all kinds of ways. It was written and directed by Todd Field, and one thing you can say about Todd Field is that he certainly takes his time making movies, and he hasn't made very many of them. His career goes back to some short films that he made back in the 90s, but I will now list his entire filmography of feature-length movies. In the Bedroom, from 2001, Little Children, in 2006, and now Tar, in 2022. So again, he takes his time, and there's a long time between projects, and this movie, you can see why that would be, because it's quite an ambitious film in all kinds of ways. So Tar stars Cate Blanchett, a very, very fine actress who is doing all kinds of major work nowadays and has been doing so for quite a number of years now. And she plays a woman named Lydia Tar, who is the conductor of a very major orchestra in Germany. She's American, but her main gig is directing, conducting, and being music director of this German orchestra. And we find out at the very beginning of the movie that she is just enormously smart and gifted in all different kinds of ways. She has everything from a summa cum laude degree from Harvard to she did field work as an anthropologist. She's a composer, a really major conductor and a groundbreaking one, one of the very few female conductors of one of the world's major orchestras, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that is our main character. And we find all about her, we find out all about her at the very beginning of the film, because we see her being interviewed at the New Yorker Festival. And the real life New Yorker writer, a very brilliant one, by the way, Adam Gotnick, is interviewing her and talking to her about music and classical music and culture, and we find out all about her background. And this opening scene of the movie fascinated me, because while I didn't time it, it seems to go on for about 10 minutes of just this New Yorker writer interviewing this fictional composer about classical music. And I thought, wow, that's not something you see very often in the movies these days. Not only that they were talking all about classical music, but that they were talking at all. And I realized this is going to be a very verbally driven movie, a very dialogue-driven movie, and a movie that's about serious, intellectual, high-culture things. And in fact, it does turn out to be all those things, although that doesn't necessarily make it a great movie. So once we get out of the New Yorker Festival at the beginning of the film, we start to get into her career. And we see all the things that she's doing, and she has conversations with various colleagues, and we see her leading a seminar where she teaches of young conducting students, and then later on we see her interacting with various other kinds of people, and we discover that there are conflicts in her life and conflicts in her career. Also, we discover that she is a lesbian, and she has a lesbian partner whose name is Sharon, who is also a very gifted musician, and they live together and they have a child together. And we find out that there is a woman in their past, a woman who never appears in the movie, whose name was Krista, who apparently had some sort of professional and probably sexual relationship with our main character, Lydia Tar. And she is very unhappy, and she is acting erratically, and she is sending bizarre emails and text messages to people. And then a tragic thing happens involving Krista, and this sets various other things in motion over the course of the film. So we have here a movie with a real plot. and real sort of dramatic and romantic things going on, but also some tragic things going on. And there are odd little echoes of sort of other kinds of intrigue. Every once in a while, for example, Lydia Tarr goes jogging and she seems to hear screams off in the distance. And we can't tell whether these are real screams or maybe she might have some sort of mental instability. And things like this go on over the course of the movie. There's also something which has made the movie Tar fairly controversial, which is that there's some business in it about identity politics. Lydia Tarr has no patience with that at all. And early on in the film, she has a very testy interaction with one of her conducting students, where she dismisses the whole idea of identity politics and says what we must do is subject ourselves sort of accept in all humility the greatness of high art without worrying about the personal morality of the people who create the high art. And this is something which some people have made a big fuss over. I think it's very interesting because the movie does not offer its own definitive points of view on this sort of issue. It just raises them for us to think about and for the characters to think about. And I found that quite wonderful. In some ways, Tar is kind of a mess. It's a very long movie. It's well over 2.5 hours long. And I would say that for about 3/4 of that time, maybe even 4/5 of that time, it's really interesting because it's really about intellectual and interesting and provocative subjects. For the last about 15 or 20 minutes, it gathers speed. It races through things really, really fast and is very choppy and hasty. So I think the movie is very seriously damaged by maybe the finale, the last few scenes. But most of the way through, while it is by no means a perfect movie, it is just so interesting to watch and to listen to, and such a refreshing change from so much of today's comic book style movie making. So I say everybody should go see Tar, everybody should think about Tar, everybody should react with pleasure or displeasure to its various points of view, and savor the rather over-the-top but very, very persuasive acting of Cate Blanchett and the others in the cast, and just have a stimulating time with it. Tar is a very stimulating movie, and I'm really glad I saw it. Now for something completely different, Dead for a Dollar. And this is really completely different. As the title might possibly suggest, this is a Western. And that's the sort of title you might have seen a few decades ago on a spaghetti Western. Those movies that were made in Italy, which were in the Western genre and which were full of all kinds of over-the-top violence and whatnot. And in a way, Dead for a Dollar is a kind of homage to that kind of filmmaking. It's also dedicated to the late great filmmaker Bud Bedeker, who made some fabulous Westerns in his day. So Dead for a Dollar is a Western made very much in today's world, but which is in a way kind of paying tribute to Westerns of old, Western styles of old. And I found it a pretty good movie. It was directed by Walter Hill, who is known for action films and who is known for made a lot of Westerns. He first developed a kind of a cult around him back in the 70s with movies like Hard Times and The Driver and The Long Riders, and Southern Comfort was made in the early 80s. And he kept on over his whole career making mainly action movies of various kinds, not all Westerns, but many of them were. He's now getting old. He's around 80 years old, but he's still working and still making movies with a lot of action. And Dead for a Dollar is one of those movies. So here we have a couple of main characters, and we're sort of alternating between them as the movie proceeds. The first one we meet is Willem Dafoe, that is played by Willem Dafoe, and he plays a character whose name is Joe. And he is kind of a bad dude. He's in jail for some sort of violent, horrible thing he did. He's a gambler. He's a gunslinger. He's all of those things. And so we meet him, and we find out he's just about to get out of jail. He has just served his latest 5-year sentence, and he's going to get out. And he has an encounter at the very beginning of the movie with our other main character, who is a guy named Max, who is played by Christoph Waltz. And Max says, "I know you're getting out of jail soon. Stay away from me. Don't come anywhere near me. We've had bad times in the past, and we'll have bad times again if you come anywhere near me." The next thing that happens is that Max is hired. He is a bounty hunter by profession. That's what he is. And he is hired to track down the wife of a very wealthy business executive. All this, of course, is in the Old West back in the late 19th century. And he is hired to track her down and find this woman who has been been purloined, been kidnapped by a very bad guy who has brought her down to Mexico. And Max is hired to find this woman whose name is Rachel. She is the third main character of the film, who again has been kidnapped by a man who turns out to be an African-American who has deserted from the army and kidnapped Rachel and run off. So Max is hired to find them. And so he goes down to Mexico to track them down. Then what he discovers is, and what we discover is, that Rachel was not kidnapped by her African-American companion, whose name is Elijah, at all. She went off with him very willingly because her husband, the extremely wealthy business executive, was a bad, abusive, evil person. So we have Max the bounty hunter, who is tracking down Rachel, who was supposedly kidnapped but really ran off very willingly with the army deserter. And then, of course, Joe enters the picture again, the Willem Dafoe character, who ends up in a terrible conflict with Max, and there's all kinds of gunslinging and bloody vengeance and stuff like that goes on. So Dead for a Dollar earns its title. It's about violence. It's about people killing each other. And I found it to be quite an effective Western. It's an old-fashioned Western. It's not the kind of movie that is in style nowadays, but it's well-acted. Christoph Waltz is such a wonderful actor. Willem Dafoe is one of the best actors we have around. Rachel Brosnahan is just fine as Rachel, the main female character of the film. And I just had a pretty good time watching it. I am not a member of the Walter Hill cult. I think a lot of his movies are wildly overrated by all kinds of people, but I did rather enjoy Dead for a Dollar. So if you're in the mood for an old-fashioned, fairly violent Western, you'll do a lot worse than seeking out Dead for a Dollar. And our last movie for today, Jill, is called Fall. And oh, that does just describe the movie so well. It is directed and co-written by Scott Mann, and it is about two young women, and they are climbers. They are mountain climbers. And we find this out in the very opening scene of the movie, so this is not a spoiler. They are all climbing a big rock face and doing the kinds of things that mountain climbers do. And they're doing it with, their names are Becky and Shiloh Hunter, but she's always called by her last name, Hunter. So we have Becky and Hunter, and they are climbing this mountain with Becky's husband, and he has a horrible accident in the very first scene of the movie, and he falls, and he is killed. And this sends Becky into a terrible cycle of grief and mourning. She is drinking, she is taking pills, she is just, her life is falling apart. And so her best friend, Hunter, says she's got to get Becky out of this. So why don't they go do a climb together? Why don't they go do something? Because after all, it's like falling off a horse. You got to get back in the saddle and ride again, or you'll never do it. So Hunter says to Becky, come on, we'll do this climb, and it will help you get over your grief, and it will help you get back into climbing, which is the thing you love most in life. But they're not going to climb a mountain this time. They're going to climb an old abandoned television tower, which is 2,000 feet high. And it is a great big sort of metal tube arising up out of the earth for 2,000 feet, and there is a ladder attached to the side of the tube almost all the way up, and that is what they are going to climb. And so very reluctantly, Becky says, well, all right, I guess so, you talk me into it. And so these two young women, Becky and Hunter, go out, and they go to the tower, and they start to climb. Well, they shouldn't do it. And you can tell that right away. Very early in the climb, one of them puts her foot on one of the metal rungs on the ladder, and it crumbles under the foot. And the thing, yeah, it's all rusty. It's an abandoned television tower. It is not sturdy, shall we say. Some of the bolts that hold the ladder to the side of the tower are shaky and rattly. And when you step on a rung of the ladder, they shake and they rattle. So they shouldn't do this, but hey, they're intrepid young women, and so they do. And that is what almost the whole film is about. It's about them climbing up this tower on the ladder, step by step by step, and then getting almost all the way to the top, which is where they want to get. And then things start happening. Not entirely unpredictable things, I may add. Now, I will say right now that I am an acrophobe. I do not like heights. High places and me do not get along. So for me, every movie about mountain climbing or rock climbing and that kind of thing is a sort of a horror movie. But Fall is a movie that really sets out to be a horror movie. And oh my goodness, the things that befall these two young women. Suffice it to say that they end up way up, up, high, high, high on that 2,000-foot tower. And everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. Are they going to get down? Are they going to survive? What will happen? It's a pretty suspenseful movie. If you are an acrophobe and you rather enjoy movies that send you into a state of panic, then by all means go see it. I had a good time watching it. I have to say that watching this movie touches off a kind of anxiety in me and a kind of a nervousness and a squirmishness that real horror movies virtually never do. But this movie about being way up high, oh, it really had me just sitting there on the edge of my seat pretty much the whole way. And I found it a pleasurable experience. So if you'll like horror movies, if you rather enjoy that idea of being up in a very high place or watching other people up in a very high place and watching their anxiety and feeling your own anxiety, which I always regard as kind of vicarious fun, then by all means go see Fall. It's a minimalist horror movie. It has two main characters, hardly anybody else in the whole film, but I felt that it sustained its suspense and its tension all the way through. So I fell for Fall. And that is my pretty varied story this week, Joe.
Varied it is. Thank you so much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Tar, Dead for a Dollar, and Fall.